But I want to suggest to us today that it's not just this criminal on the cross who needs to contemplate his own life. This is something that we're all invited to do. You know, our circumstances may be somewhat different, and none of us are here facing the death penalty with any sort of imminence, I imagine. And yet our case is not so different from his, is it? Isn't there for all of us some sort of a sentence of death hanging over us? Isn't there the inevitability of our impending death? That one day, sooner or later, death will overtake us. Some of us may recognize this face. Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales, if you've followed the UK news at all, then you'll know that she's recently been diagnosed with cancer. You know, obviously a prominent figure like her gets plenty of press and attention. But then one announcement, one comment struck my eye. That someone commenting on her diagnosis says, this announcement from this princess, from royalty, is a stark and shocking reminder that cancer is no respecter of age or social status. It's not just cancer, though, is it? It's death. Death takes no prisoners. The Bible speaks of death as a great enemy, an enemy of all humanity, for we will all die. Death is no respecter of age, of social status. And the Bible is also clear as it goes on to talk about death that there is a reason for the inevitability of our passing. And it's the words of the criminal on the cross. We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. In some way or another, we've all chosen the path of death. Whenever we have, to a greater or lesser extent, chosen selfishness, greed, hatred, lies, whenever we have chosen the deeds of darkness, we have chosen the path that can only, that must lead to death. And not just for us individually, but every generation of humanity has continued to make that choice, to walk that path. The language in the Bible to speak of this is the language of sin, of transgression, of guilt. It's the language that we sung of in these songs so far in our service. Humanity is mortally wounded, a self-inflicted mortal wound that festers and plagues us one generation after another. We're slow to admit it. We like to make excuses for why we are the way we are, for the reason we make the decisions that we do, but the Bible acts as a great mirror in this regard, to reveal our hearts. If we would allow God to speak, then we find that he gently, but deliberately and powerfully exposes the darkness of each of our hearts to show us the reality that death is rooted in us because we are at the root of death. Yes, we are capable of incredible feats of love and of creativity. Yes, we can perform great acts of service. Humans are able to mesmerize with our power to bring hope and joy. But more powerfully and more terribly, are we not those who cause the daily angst and frustration and hurt and pain that so characterizes this world? Sometimes in great ways, but far more often in all those little ways, each day, we are death dealers. And if we are unable to see it in ourselves, can't we see it in others? Isn't humanity corrupted and broken? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. There's this great inevitability for each of us, the inevitability of our own demise. That is, until we come to Jesus. There's something different about Jesus, isn't there? Here is a man of many miracles, whose hands and from whose mouth flowed forth life. an incredible abundance of life. And so the people at the cross, these people who had witnessed Jesus' heavenly words and miraculous deeds, they cry out, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is God's Messiah, the chosen one." And one of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us. We've seen all these things that you've done. We've witnessed all these miracles. You are a man of life." Our readings from the book of Luke today picked up from chapters 22 and 23. Throughout the earlier chapters of Luke, we've been introduced to this incredible man, a man who is full of life, full of love, full of power. Power to do whatever he wants. This is the Lord Jesus who raised the dead in chapter 7, who calmed the storm with a word in chapter 8, who in chapter 9, taking a few loaves of bread and a couple of fish, feeds the multitudes, thousands of people. He claims to be the God of the whole world, the creator of the universe, come in human flesh, walking amongst us. This is the God who is full of power and might, full of life. And wherever he goes, life flows forth. The sick come to him and are healed. The blind come and they see. The lame come and they can walk. The deaf come to him and their ears are unstopped. Here is a man full of life. If we go back to the words of the criminal upon the cross, not the one who hurled insults at Jesus, but the one in verse 41. "We're punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve." And then he goes on to say, "But this man has done nothing wrong." Jesus is a man overflowing with life, in whom is no death or darkness. Death has no claim on him because he has done nothing wrong. He has lived a completely righteous life. He has never chosen darkness. He has never corrupted himself through the pursuit of selfish greed or personal gain. He has always walked in the ways of truth and of righteousness. He has always honored God the Father in heaven. I remember when I was 18 or 19 or so, I took out a year out of my studies to serve at a church in London. And I got access. I got the keys to the building, so to speak. It was this grand old building, beautiful. If you go to London, you visit Oxford Circus, big famous street, crosses with Regent Street. You look up Regent Street to the top of it. Wonderful building. Grand old church. It's a public building. Anyone, most of the time, can walk in and enjoy this architecture, this place of worship. But obviously, even though it's easy to get into, there are many places you cannot go. And so it was such a thrill for a teenage me to think, wow, I've got access. I could actually go anywhere in this building that I like. I've got the keys. I could open any door. I had to find the right one. That was a bit tricky at times, but I could go anywhere I wanted. Any door could be opened. That's what it's like for Jesus. He has the keys of life. He can go wherever he wants. He can choose life. He is so abundantly full of life that it overflows from him to others. Humanity could be completely deathbound, but Jesus is different. He can live, truly live, the fullness of life, even if we cannot. And yet, he chooses to go to the grave. He chooses this journey to Jerusalem, knowing that when he enters it, this would be the place of his death. Now, as a church minister, I have the great privilege of being involved with families and individuals at key moments in life. We speak of it as hatch, match, and dispatch. Hatch, you know, not hatching of an egg, but the hatching of life. When a baby is born, we're often involved in some way or another, not in the delivery room, thankfully, but by way of baptism, of children giving thanks, to the Lord for life. We match people as they get married. Don't come looking for me if you're single, and I can't help in that way. And we dispatch people at the end of life as people go. Often great joy in the hatching and the matching. Great sorrow and sadness when we come to the funeral. It's a time of terrible sadness. All sorts of emotion, which many of us will know in a very real and personal sense. A time of grief and of suffering. Yeah, and people say all sorts of things as they reflect on the loss of a loved one. There's so many things that they'd wish they'd said. So often I hear people say these words, "I'd give anything to get them back. I'd do anything to save them. I'd give up absolutely anything." Why does Jesus choose to die? Why does this man full of life go to the grave? Because he's unwilling to look upon humanity death-bound on the way to the grave. He's unwilling to stand by and do nothing. It's as if he's at the graveside saying, "I'd do anything to save them. I'd give up everything for them. I'd even be willing to die." The living one would go to the grave to rescue the dying ones. It's what our reading from Isaiah 53 was talking about. He took up our pain and bore our suffering. By his wounds, we are healed. His sacrifice is able to save and to give life to another. It's one of the classic storylines, isn't it? The hero at the final battle, the final hurdle, in order to deal the death blow to his enemy, to his nemesis, must sacrifice himself. It's the story of the parents. In order to save the life of their child, gives up their own life so that their child might live. Jesus goes to the cross for humanity. The living one dies so that the dying ones might live. We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. Our deaths are inevitable. We've chosen death 1,000 times. We've made the down payment. And so death will come our way one day. But this man, he's done nothing wrong. Jesus' death is a choice that he makes. You know, the thief on the cross, he understands all this. This criminal facing his own death. And so he says in verse 42, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Death is a terribly sad thing. It always is. There's never such a thing as a good death. There's no joy or to be gladness to be had in any death. And yet, on this Friday, as we remember the death of Jesus, it is a good Friday. Because it's a Friday where we find hope for humanity. There's hope for us whose lives are entangled by death. We find hope by looking to the dying moments of the man, Jesus. On the cross, we see the living one die so that dying ones might live. And as we look today, we're invited to put ourselves on the cross. And not to put ourselves in Jesus' place. No. We can't ever go where Jesus goes. We can't take his place. But we are invited to take our place next to Jesus. We're invited to join in that criminal whose words we've been considering. And to join in with him as he says, "We're punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man's done nothing wrong." We're invited to look upon the wounds of Jesus dying on the cross and to find hope, the hope of healing for our death-bound souls. and to join in with the words of that criminal. The final words he says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Amen.